Today on the Christmas Day edition of the Travel Guys.
In the travel news, could Meals and Coach be making a comeback? The winter hotel points promotions are in, and I'm sorry, but there's nothing much to shout about.
What would a Christmas show be without Santa Claus? We have one of Santa's premier helpers joining us on the phone at 3:20.
Where would you go for a true winter wonderland experience? To Yellowstone National Park, I would say. Scott Angeletti joins us at 3:35 to tell you how you can be part of a magical winter trip to Yellowstone.
Sometimes sitting next to a child on an airplane can be an ear-shattering experience. But Mark says there are some advantages of sitting next to a young traveler on a plane. That's coming up at 3:45.
And finally, the travel guys share a few personal holiday thoughts before we all head for Christmas dinner.
Merry Christmas to all, and thank you so much for making the Travel Guys part of your holiday.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again.
I'm a traveling man, king of the road.
Riding on the city of New Orleans.
Kicks out on the Route 66.
That's entertainment.
Let's go on with the show.
Merry Christmas, everyone, and welcome to the Christmas Day edition of the Travel Guys. Mark Hoffman, Tom Romano with you, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Mark, Merry Christmas, my friend.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Same to you and
thank your family
and all of the folks here at KFBK. And it's a big team that you have here.
Yes, we do. And a wonderful one, I might add. Did you have a pretty good week? Were you able to get all the presents that you wanted?
I had, run out of time? Like most people, I had more things to do than I had time to do them. And what would really help me in the week before Christmas is if everyone else would stay home so that I could get around and get my things done. And then I'd be happy to call people and let them know that, okay, it's okay to take to the streets.
Well, you just need to go to that one store that's open 24 hours a day. You know the one, the one that got into a little trouble about, you know, the discounted prices and all of that based on the fact that they never actually sold it at the retail price. And then they did the, but they're open 24 hours.
Yeah.
What you do is you just buy everything there and you go at 2 o'clock in the morning, no crowds.
Yeah. I know a lady who prides herself in having her Christmas shopping done every year by October the 1st.
Yeah. Wow.
And I just think that's embarrassing. I mean, really and truly. If you were done by December the 1st or December the 15th, that would be impressive. But October the 1st, that's just way too organized for me.
Well, you know, I remember years ago when I was a single guy and I would shop for, you know, my family. And at that time, my girlfriend, later to be the wife. I would go Christmas shopping on Christmas Eve. I really would.
Yeah.
I'd start in the middle of the day, and I would do it all.
The later the day gets, the less the crowds are.
Yes.
Of course, sometimes you can't exactly get the thing that you want, but a lot of things are reduced in price on Christmas Eve.
That was the other part. See, I never really looked for, I never really had a list. I had just wandered through. I remember going, you're familiar with Cost Plus.
Yeah.
Well, when I first moved here from Modesto, where there were no Cost Pluses, and I went into that store, and they had the, you know, just weird stuff, stuff you don't see anywhere else on the planet. And, you know, folks back in Modesto, you know, it's not like it's living in, you know, the middle of nowhere, but bottom line, the things that you could get there, they've never seen before.
Right.
So I just did all my shopping at Cost Plus, and they were just weirded out by the stuff I got. I don't know if that's a good thing or not. Well, okay, let's get this radio show underway. We got lots of things to do and places to be. So let's find out what's going on in the travel news on a Christmas day. Mark, what do you got for me?
Sounds good to me, Thomas. We talked in the headlines about telling people how they could win Starbucks for life. What does this have to do about travel? I'm going to suggest to you that most people who travel drink most of their Starbucks while they're traveling. if you've ever been in, if you've ever gone out to the airport in the morning. By the way, I need to make just a real quick plug. The Iron Horse Tavern is where Sports Leisure Vacations had part of our Christmas party. We had kind of a progressive meal. And the food there was really good. The service was excellent. I had never eaten in that restaurant. And since there's one of them out at the airport, that will give me an opportunity to patronize them on a more regular basis. But if you're ever wondering, at least for our folks, boy, everybody came out of there just. I had probably the best hamburger I can ever remember having. at that tavern.
I'm feeling a little left out because that's in the older Terminal A.
Yes.
Not the new Terminal
yes.
B. And I'm, you know, I'm on Southwest so much,
yeah.
I don't get over there. So.
Yeah, well, of course, I'm talking about the one downtown, but I'm going to eat at the one at the airport now
right.
because
well,
I know the one downtown has such great food.
There you go.
So, all right, here. This is how to enter the win the sweepstakes for life. Starbucks, you have to enter by January the 16th for a chance to win one of five grand prizes, one Starbucks food or beverage item per day for 30 years.
Ooh.
That's over 10,000 cups of coffee, muffins, etc. Runner-up prizes include free Starbucks for a year. There are 25 of those. For a month, 125, or for a week, 500. To enter, provide the requested contact information, name, email, etc. on the sweepstakes landing page and press submit. Entries must be earned by making a Starbucks, may also be earned by making a Starbucks purchase with a Starbucks card and visiting the sweepstakes landing page. So there you go. It's your chance to go to travelguysradio.com, and we have a link there. If you want to win Starbucks for life, you would be the envy of everyone you know.
There will be a lot of entries into this contest.
Absolutely. Delta Airlines is considering bringing back free meals in coach. But if you get on the plane in Sacramento, this may not work for you.
No.
They tried a trial between November 1st and December 15th on their transcon flights from Los Angeles and San Francisco to see if people enjoyed having free meals again.
Are they bringing back the shoe leather steak and the rubber chicken?
The mystery meat, yes.
Yeah.
No, and they say it could become permanent if it's well-received by flyers. I'm going to suggest to you that even if you put mystery meat in front of people, they would still be okay with it. So this is the deal. This is what they had. Morning passengers chose between a honey maple breakfast sandwich or a breakfast medley, whatever that was, and lunch options included a mesquite smoked turkey with chips, the whole turkey. I guess that's like the turkey that was on the plane on Delta, or a whole grain veggie wrap. We are constantly actively listening to our customers and employees, gathering their feedback, testing new products on board to continuously blah, 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 blah. So if you fly, it sounds like they're testing this for the transcontinental stuff, which is extremely competitive going across the country.
Right.
And that you get on a plane in Sacramento, you'll get the peanuts and maybe a watered down 7-Up if you're lucky. 17 hours on a plane, there is a new flight. This is the longest flight on the planet. Where do you think it goes from?
17 hours.
17 hours.
It's going to be.
Doesn't start in this country.
Oh, it doesn't.
Doesn't.
Wow, I don't know.
It starts
in Australia.
Ah, very good. I was just going to say, first clue down under.
Yeah,
that's very good. Between Australia and London.
And that's where they run out of gas.
17 hours, 14,498 kilometers. So that must be about pretty close to 20,000 miles.
That's a big gas tank.
17 hours. Boeing 787 Dreamliners with 236 seats.
I always been creeped out by the long flights, and you got an engine that you know gets about 3 miles to the gallon as it sucks up that fuel, and you're thinking, you know, this plane has got to be about 75% fuel.
Mm-hmm. But they don't run out. But the thing is, if you've ever been on the ground and it delays, fuel can play a big role. We only have one fuel truck at the airport. We'll have to wait for it to get here. Or we don't have enough fuel. We're going to have to go back and get some more fuel. And it's like, well, why didn't we get more fuel before we came out here in the first place? You know, and it's kind of, yes. American Airlines has been fined $1.6 million for tarmac delays. It's a rule that was put into place after a huge snowstorm in Detroit stranded a bunch of Northwest airplanes years ago.
I can't believe that this is still going on. They must, make enough money that, even if they have these delays and they have to pay fines, they're still got the big profit margin. That's crazy.
This ties the biggest fine assessed against an airline for violating tarmac delay rules, specifically 20 flights in Charlotte, February 16th of 2013, 6 flights in Dallas, 2015, 1 flight in Shreveport, 2015. In all cases, planes were stuck on the tarmac for more than 3 hours without allowing passengers to disembark.
I have to ask you, and this is a line that you use a lot, so you'll say, as I might suggest, okay? Uh-huh. It's one of your best phrases.
Okay.
Would you suggest that they really don't care if it's the delayed and they get fined, or they say, oh my gosh, we're going to get fined, we need to do something? Or do you just think it's kind of like some of the other things that goes on with certain companies, is they just don't care?
Well, a lot of those, when they get fined, you know, they get fined for not providing the right services to the disabled. Some of the fine is forgiven if they improve the service or something like that. That's not the case here. So they had to actually pay the $1.6 million, first of all, which, you're right, is probably a little more than pocket change to a big airline like American. But I'm going to suggest to you that the fact that we're talking about it on the radio is probably a very, very bad thing for them. And I will suggest to you that airlines are very aware of this rule, and that that it has probably saved a lot of people from being in those positions over the years, because it, since it has come about, because the airlines are careful about how long they put you out there and getting stuck out on it. They don't even board an aircraft anymore if they don't think that they can take off. So it has made a difference. New promotions from the hotels are in. Marriott, Starwood, Ritz-Carlton are all giving you double points for the first three stays in the first quarter. Kind of pretty much everybody is pretty much double points. Nothing real spectacular there, but if you are traveling in the first quarter, you can save yourself a few dollars. And there is proposed legislation that could protect online reviewers from retaliatory suits. So perhaps if this legislation goes through and you write a review, somebody cannot come back and sue you because they felt that you wrote an incorrect review or something like that, something that probably would help protect consumers. We'll see about that with the upcoming presidential administration. And that is your travel news for today.
And we are your travel guys. Visit travelguysradio.com. Follow along with the show. You can also find podcasts there. Coming up, well, special guest, National Santa, Santa's premier helper,
yep,
joins us on the radio right here, right now, 3 minutes on KFBK. Mark and Tom, the travel guys here, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations on this Christmas Day. And everyone had a wonderful, wonderful Christmas Eve and a great Christmas Day so far. Mark, we pretty much felt it, you know, necessary at this particular, on this particular day to, you know, have some holiday cheer and talk to an unusual and somewhat celebrity guest, wouldn't you say?
I would say so. Of course, yesterday, last night, Santa Claus made the rounds around the planet. And so getting a hold of Santa Claus on Christmas Day, my goodness, the man must be just taking a little bit of a nap. But we have the next best thing here, Tom. We have virtually Santa's right-hand man. He's National Santa, joining us right here on the Travel Guys. Welcome, Santa.
Hello, how are you guys?
Wonderful. Do I hear bells jingling in the background?
Oh, good. We have a little bells. All Kringles have bells. Yes, we all have bells around.
Oh, goodness. Santa, are you there at the North Pole today, kind of getting things straightened up while the boss takes a little nap, or?
Yes, it's you know, Santa is now resting. The reindeer are exhausted. They're getting plenty to eat, and they all get massages too. So that's all, you know. They work very, very hard, you know, and they get sore muscles, and I don't think any of them got any muscle cramps this year. But you know, they're well taken care of right now, resting and getting ready for a nice vacation.
Now, National Santa, you're Santa's right hand guy. You are the one who trains many of the Kringles that we see all around the country. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, I mean, some of the children are probably listening, but you know, they wonder, they see Santa everywhere, and one of the things that helps Santa is that he has a lot of relatives. You know, it's the Kringle family, and so we have Kringles everywhere. And my job that Santa has assigned me to help train these Kringles and help them be ready to meet with the children. And then, of course, we're all responsible for reporting back to the North Pole on everybody who's naughty or nice, and, you know, all the wishes the children have and things like that.
If you're listening to the Travel Guys, you are hearing Santa Claus's right-hand man. It's National Santa, and we're talking to him here right on Christmas Day after Santa Claus has finished his rounds. Santa, is there anything that you tell when you're training the other Kringles and things like that? Are there specific things? I mean, like, for example, I remember sitting down and answering some letters from Santa Claus with a group of people and helping Santa out one year, and we were told very carefully not to promise things that Santa couldn't deliver and stuff. So how do you approach that when you're training new Kringles to go out into the Santa world?
Well, first of all, you know, Santa never really promises anything. You know, we can't, because things change all the time. You know, children sometimes also request things that are quite out of the realm of what is feasible for them. So we have to, you know, you don't always get what you want, you get what you need. You know, that it's that type of thing. But what we do is we try to make the child feel good. We heard what their wishes are, and we, you know, promise them that, you know, that we will surprise them Christmas morning. We never deny anything either. In other words, if a child asks for something that's, you know, kind of, you know, unusual, we don't want to say, no, you can't have that. But, of course, we have to be very careful because, you know, maybe the situation is in their household that they will get that item, you know. So we try to be very careful. So never promise anything, but never deny anything. We want the child to walk away with a very optimistic feeling that, wow, I got to talk to Santa. I told him what I wanted. Boy, if I'm good, it's going to be there under the tree Christmas morning.
Santa, is it uncommon for kids to sit on Santa's lap and ask for something for someone else?
In fact, I've had children actually come up and say, you know, Santa, I'm lucky. My family takes care of me. I don't need anything, but make sure that some of the kids that need clothes or need something else, well, you take care of them, you know. Isn't it nice that a child has that thought in mind? So they do ask for other things, or maybe they ask for something for their mom or their dad. Children also have been told Santa grants wishes, and sometimes they take the wishes beyond toys, beyond the toy world, and they ask for things like bringing mom and dad back together because of a divorce, or making someone in the family well who's ill. These are things that Santa can't do because his magic is toys. But Santa has to listen to the child. Santa has to acknowledge, you know, what the child has said, and hopefully give them an answer that they'll feel good about. If it's a case of divorce in the school, we tell the Santas to let the children know that, you know, we know it's not your fault or anything like that, and maybe things will get better. Maybe mom and dad will get back together. But here's something you need to know. Both your mom and dad love you very, very much. And no matter what happens, they'll always love you. Santa loves you too. And then we kind of change the subject and go into the toy part. But we want the child to feel good, you know, or at least have some answer, whatever the difficult question might be.
National Santa, with that being said, what is the most satisfying part of your job?
Well, I think the most satisfying I have is when I get to, you know, visit families and children and bring them toys and gifts that they weren't expecting. Just the last couple of days now, I've been able to the Children's Hospital and the Ronald McDonald House and other locations where I get to meet families who right now at this time of year, isn't it difficult that they're at a hospital and they can't be at home? And all of a sudden, Santa shows up and he's got a bag with toys and gifts in it. And not just the child that's at, you know, in the hospital bed, but gifts for all the kids in the family. So everybody's taken care of. Because right now, mom and dad, you know, out of pocket, they probably don't have a lot to take care of Christmas. So isn't it neat to bring them these gifts and things like that? Recently, I got to fly with the Blue Angels, the Marine crew that flies Fat Albert Airlines for the Blue Angels. And we left Andrews Air Force Base, and we had 50,000 toys on board a C-130, and we flew to Fayetteville, North Carolina, and delivered those toys for children who were victims of Hurricane Matthew. And that's what's really makes you feel so good, that you can do things for these children and these families.
Santa, I know that part of your work with Santa Claus is to help train the Kringles, as we were talking about. And one of the ways that you do that is on a cruise ship. So somebody was, you have lots of ways of reaching new Santas and training Kringles. And one of the ways you do that is on board a ship. Tell us a little bit about that. And if anybody's listening who wants to become a Kringle and help Santa, this would be your opportunity.
Well, it's kind of an unusual thing. For many years, we've had the training program with school for Santas and traveling around the country and doing weekend schools, two-day schools. And one of the things that evolved was actually groups of Santas going on a princess cruise. And we've gone to the Caribbean and Hawaii and Europe. And this coming March 4 through 11, we're going to Mexico. It's a one-week cruise. We've got about 50 Santas and wives going on, Mrs. Clauses, going on board. And during the cruise, they'll also have school where they will take their classes on Santa and being a good Kringle and everything. Plus, we'll have a little bit of a vacation.
If you go to travelguysradio.com, you can find a link where you can find out about Santa's school. Our national Santa that we're speaking to on the phone right now is the Santa for the Hollywood Christmas Parade. You may have seen him there, and also he is Toys for Us Santa. And today, we are proud to call him the Travel Guys Santa. Santa, thank you for spending a little bit of time with us today. Say hi to the boss. Put in a good word for the Travel Guys with the boss for us, would you?
Tom and Mark, Merry Christmas to you, and Merry Christmas to all of your listeners, and a Happy New Year.
Thank you, Santa. We are the Travel Guys, bringing you some holiday cheer today. Thank you.
And that's not all we're bringing you on this special Christmas Day edition of the Travel Guys. When we come back after the news, we're going to take you to Yellowstone National Park, which absolutely qualifies as America's winter wonderland, right here on the Travel Guys.
You can travel by road. You can fly.
We're back. It's the Travel Guys Christmas Day program, live here in studio, sort of, kind of.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Mark, did you have a good Christmas?
I did. I really did. My staff was very generous to me this Christmas. I got everything that was on my list and perhaps a little bit more. So I'm very grateful this Christmas.
You know, Yellowstone National Park isn't necessarily something that you, a place that you would think of going in the wintertime.
No.
But you know what? Scott Angeletti from Sports Leisure Vacations is here and may change your mind about that. Thanks for joining us, Scott. How you doing?
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Good, good. Thanks for
taking... Merry Christmas to you.
Same to you. Thanks for taking time out of your busy Christmas schedule to spend a little time with us. Mark, Scott, what are we going to talk about?
Sports Leisure Vacations has a wonderful trip coming up in a couple of months that I thought would be perfect for a Christmas Day show. Scott is taking some folks to Yellowstone National Park, a trip that he has taken before. He's got four seats available on it. So I thought somebody might be listening to this broadcast today who has never been to Yellowstone National Park, or certainly has never been there in the wintertime, which is a spectacular time to go. Scott, tell us about Yellowstone Park in the winter.
Well, you know, Yellowstone is all about the wildlife and the thermal features, all the geysers and whatnot. But the great thing about going in the wintertime is there's hardly anybody in the park, and it's very pristine. The only two hotels that are open would be one up in Mammoth up in the north, and then the Snow Lodge, which is right next to Old Faithful. And so the only people that are in the park are the people that are can stay in those two properties, or they're coming in snowmobiles.
A snow lodge? What is a snow lodge?
Well, at Old Faithful, they have the historic Old Faithful Lodge, but they closed that in the winter. And in 1999, they built a beautiful property, and it's right next to their fairly new visitor center and Old Faithful itself. So really great accommodations, and you walk out your door, and Old Faithful is just right there.
Now, is this at the Snow Lodge? Is it a smaller place than the big hotel at Old Faithful?
Yeah, it's smaller than the Old Faithful, yes.
So I understand, Scott, that while you're in the park, one night you're staying in this snow lodge, but you're also doing some of your sightseeing by a thing called a snow coach. I've never been to Yellowstone in the wintertime. Help me understand what a snow coach is and why that is such a cool way to see the park.
Yeah, the snow coaches are basically these are coaches that they use during the summer. And in the wintertime, they take the wheels off and they put skis on the front and tracks on the back. So it's a very comfortable way to travel through the park.
So you get to see, I mean, are there animals moving around in the park in the wintertime? Is this a wildlife opportunity? You've done this before, have you seen?
Yeah, we see all kinds of wildlife, and the bison tend to congregate around the geysers because because of the heat, there's no snow around the geysers, but the trees are all frosted with icicles on them. It's just an amazing experience. But the bison, they'll walk right down the middle of the road as you're traveling along on the snow coach. We've seen wolves, coyotes, fox, river otters, moose, elk. I mean, just about everything except for a bear, because the bears are obviously there. They're hibernating for the winter.
That sounds really awesome. Bison gathered around a geyser keeping warm. Now, you don't run across a Yogi Bear, though, isn't this? Oh, wait a minute. That's Jellystone. Never mind.
That's Jellystone, Tom. Yeah.
Besides, it's winter, Tom. He's hibernating.
He's hibernating.
You know, in the middle of the winter.
But he's always looking for a picnic basket.
But saying that, though, we do go to the Grizzly Wolf Discovery Center in West Yellowstone, and they feed those bears, so they're up all, they're awake all winter long.
Now,
and
Scott, how do you
cool to be see the grizzly bears and the wolves up close?
Scott, how do your travelers deal with the cold weather? I mean, obviously, and in order to be in a place like this and have all this snow and ice and this natural winter beauty around you, the winter wonderland kind of thing, it's not going to be 50 degrees outside.
No, we have the coaches. You're warm in the coach. You have to be bundled up for winter. You have a winter jacket and thermals on and boots. But I will say we've had several days because of the elevation. You're over 7,000 feet. If it's sunny and not windy, it's quite nice. I mean, if you go up to Tahoe, even up to Tahoe in the wintertime, and it's sunny out with no wind, I mean, we've had several days where we've had just like a fleece on. We've had thermals underneath. But yep, if it's get some snow or it's overcast, it can get chilly, you know, into the teens, 20s. So have to be prepared.
So, Scott, how many days are you there in Yellowstone?
Well, we stay outside on West Yellowstone on our arrival and departure, and one night in the park at the Snow Lodge. But we do like two full days on snow coaches that go out to the Grand Canyon of Yellowstone, which is quite isolated, and the only way you can get there is on a snow coach in the wintertime. And we also go down to Jackson, Wyoming for two nights, and we do a wildlife safari where we go out and we see all kinds of animals that have come down from the higher elevations. They come down into Jackson Hole, mm-hmm. and we do a sleigh ride in the elk refuge. They have thousands of elk that you're just taking a sleigh ride through all of the elk.
Oh, that's amazing. Now, this trip, does Sports Leisure Vacations have any openings left, or are we just talking about if you want to do this with Sports Leisure Vacations, you're going to have to do it next year?
Yeah, we have four seats left right now, and the good thing about this trip also is it's a small group. We have a maximum of 20 people we're taking. So there we have 16 right now, and we have four seats open.
This is something I've always wanted to do. So I suspect that one of these days very soon, Scott is going to have an extra traveler on his trip, the boss, going along with him just to see the snow and stuff. It really is an outstanding package. Scott has taken groups previously, and it gets tremendous ratings. It's 7 days. It leaves on February the 10th. It's not an inexpensive package. It's $3,500 or a little more if you travel single. It's one of those unique kind of bucket list sort of things. So if you've never done anything like this before, you're with a small group of people. You're with a very experienced tour director who has been there before. If winter in Yellowstone is on your bucket list, this is the time to go. You can go to sportsleisure.com and find the trip, or at travelguysradio.com. There is a link to all of the information.
Scott, thanks so much for joining us. You have a wonderful rest of your Christmas, okay, and a safe trip, and a happy new year from the travel guys.
Thank you very much, Tom. You too.
That sounds like such an amazing outing. What a great trip. By the way, go to travelguysradio.com. We'll have a link there to Sports Leisure Vacations and all the information about that particular adventure.
It's only a group of 20 people. So if you're looking to travel and not, you know, be in a herd, so to speak, we were talking about bison. It's a wonderful opportunity to see a spectacular destination at a time when there's almost no one there.
Perfect.
So you and the animals. Hey, I've got something here. Secret language of hotel staff. Why you never want to be called a peach.
Yeah, I remember seeing this somewhere. Uh-huh. Somebody, in fact, I was in a conversation the other day and somebody called somebody a peach.
This is a short glossary of behind-the-scenes lingo used by bellhops, cleaning staff, and concierge at some favorite hotels. Now, here's a Hotel Chandler in New York, a skipper.
Skipper?
Uh-huh. Is someone who makes a reservation but never shows up for their stay.
Oh, they skip out.
A lobby lizard is the member of the staff who greets and assists guests in the lobby during busy check-in and check-out.
I thought it would be like me who just hangs around the lobby a lot.
Let's see. At the Wyndham Grand Jupiter in Florida, hoo-ha means as fast as possible.
Okay.
Make it sexy means make it as nice as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Job on the line is when you're preparing for a VIP or high-ranking manager.
You know, got it.
Job on the line. Okay, let's see. Here's some from Colorado. Front Rangers from Breckenridge, Colorado. This is kind of cool. Front Rangers, if you know Denver. Denverites who check in at the last minute to ski. So the mountains in Denver are called the Front Range.
Okay.
Weekend Warriors. Local professionals who come up on weekends to ski. Stayover, someone who was scheduled to check out but extended their own stay. Let's see here. Let's find some better ones. Okay, here's the JW Marriott in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Some of the secret language of hotel staff. A J-Dub, J-D-U-B, how staff refer to the hotel. The JW Marriott are referred to as a J-Dub. Pigs in the pen.
Okay, can't wait for this one.
A guest stuck in the parking ramp.
Okay.
Pig in a pen it is.
Okay, pig in a pen.
And let's see here. From the Great Wolf Lodge, Cubs. Remember, this is a Great Wolf Lodge. Cubs are new employees. A high paw is a high five.
Mm-hmm.
Dens at the Great Wolf Lodge are what they call rooms or suites, and their wolf pack is their loyal fans. Now, let's see here. Park Hyatt. Let's see. VIP is very important pup, but that's referring to a guest.
Uh-huh.
VIB, very important baby.
Got it.
How interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And then doubling back to the JW Marriott at Grand Rapids in Michigan again, a peach.
Yeah.
You don't want to ever be called a peach. If you're staying at the JW Marriott in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and the staff refers to you as a peach, it's not a good thing. That means a very difficult guest.
Wow. Why the acronym or why the name Peach? Any idea?
No idea. Okay. But, you know, I've stayed in that hotel, actually, at the JW Marriott in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
And you wondered why they kept calling you the Peach.
They were calling me a tomato, but maybe I will find out when I go back there. You know, we've talked a lot about being on planes with children and dogs and all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
And we've shared all of our opinions and thoughts, not of all which have always been positive. But when we come back from the break here, we're going to not only share some of our own Christmas thoughts, but I have a little thing here about why it is can be advantageous to be on a plane with a child.
Oh, wow.
Right.
Okay.
Here on the Travel Guys.
You bet.
I'm leaving on a jet plane.
It's the final segment of the Travel Guys here on Christmas Day, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Mark and Tom with you. Okay, Mark, you promised us about 3 minutes ago that you were going to share with us when it's good to be sitting next to a kid on an airplane.
This is a great, great story. I've had this for a couple of months. Christine Sarkis from Smarter Travel came up with this list. And when I saw it, because we always talk about, you know, pets and disturbances on planes from other people and children and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some advantages to sitting next to a child on a plane. This lady has really nailed it. And in my experience, she's absolutely right on. So here are some thoughts about why sometimes sitting next to a child on a plane, particularly an unaccompanied minor, might be a nice idea. They're the right size for an airplane seat. So you know how you get on and somebody takes up their seat and a third of yours?
That's true.
If it's a child, it's not likely that you're going to have any problems with spacing when it comes to seating. They don't block the view. You know, if somebody's on the window seat and they're a fairly large person, it's hard to see around them.
Right.
But a child, on the other hand, is not going to be able to block the view. And speaking of the window, if you've watched children on airplanes, and I confess I'm kind of like this myself sometimes, the window becomes a magic portal to the world when you're flying.
Absolutely.
And children, more so than anyone else, will become just absolutely gobsmacked by the whole thing and be just in wonder and amazement and remind you that indeed hurling through the sky in an aluminum tube might be indeed sort of amazing.
Yeah.
And this is really a good one. Ever sat next to somebody who had two or three or four and got real talkative or, you know, started snoring or something like that? The kid is not going to get drunk.
No.
There is no possibility of that happening. Okay, here's another one that happens. This is mostly with guys. Especially they get on and they sit in the middle seat, and then what happens, they do the man spread. They take over the armrests and they spread their legs and stuff, and pretty soon there's barely room for two other people in the row. With a child, that is not going to happen. The man spread thing, even if it happens, is not going to be nearly as serious as it might be otherwise. Okay, two more here on my list.
Wow.
They're a natural row repellent.
Okay.
If you get on a Southwest Airlines and you see like an unaccompanied minor sitting on the window in a row, take that aisle seat, because nobody's going to take that middle seat. They don't want to sit next to the kid, especially if it's a small kid.
Well, unless they've heard this conversation.
That's true. And finally, this is the last one, and this is absolutely true. And then I'll share quickly an experience of mine. They ask inspiring questions. I recall a time many years ago coming back from Seattle on a Southwest Airlines plane. There was a young man seated in like the bulkhead seat on the window, and I had the bulkhead seat on the aisle, and the middle seat remained empty. And this is back in the day when they used to still serve meals on planes.
Mm-hmm.
And so the meal came, and the young man was having a hard time negotiating. Whatever the mystery meat was, he was having a hard time cutting. He was probably 5 or 6 or something like that. And so I offered some assistance and stuff, and we got up a little conversation. And I just realized how much fun it was to be on this airplane with this kid who was asking all of these amazing questions about flying and things like that, and I could actually answer a few of them. And it turned out to be, and I'm recounting it to you, so it turns out to be that I've remembered it for many decades since. So flying and sitting next to a child on an airplane isn't always a bad thing. Now, I'm not talking about the screaming 2-year-old, but God, don't you kind of feel for the parents sometimes?
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, they got a child and children, you know, their ears hurt. There are different things that happen on airplanes, and kids don't always do well on airplanes.
Absolutely. You know, I mean,
some kids are just little turds.
Well, that's true. But here again, I've flown with my kids quite a bit when they were little. And you know, that they don't do well when they don't understand what's going on.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so if they're experiencing, you know, the pain in their ears because they're not adjusting, and all they know is they just feel horrible.
Right.
And they're horrified by the pain. And no matter what you say and what you do, there's really little or nothing that you can do to help them out. When they get a little older, they understand what's going on, and they're willing to kind of work through it. But when you're so small that you have no idea why all of a sudden your head feels like it's going to explode, and then the parents are helpless.
Right.
So all the adults and so forth around that are hearing this, certainly a lot of sympathy will go out.
So what you're suggesting is that maybe if you try to explain some of these things to the kids ahead of time.
Well, some of them can be explained
because
they're too little. But, you know, absolutely, if you're flying with a child that understand to grasp the concept that this may occur, that is going to ease it a little bit, because they'll have a concept, at least they'll know why they're in pain and not some mysterious ailment that they don't know about.
Well, you have a good Christmas in San Antonio. Before we wrap up this edition this Christmas Day, this is the first time we've ever been on Christmas Day, I think.
It is. And 7 years from now, we'll be on again.
Be on again, yeah, or maybe 6 years from
six
now.
6 years, however that math
or
works.
Or 5 years
it.
Or whatever, many leap years or something like that. Any Christmas memories, anything about the holiday that you'd like to share?
Well, you know, there is one, and it has to do with the gift-giving thing that I share with people from time to time that always are struggling over the fact that maybe they can't afford to buy, you know, the gifts that they would like for family and friends because of maybe financial reasons.
Right.
And, you know, it's not so much the gift and how much it costs, but what it means and where it came from. Many years ago, when I was in between being a full-time musician and being in radio, I had one of those years as a musician where I think my entire income for the year was about $1,100.
Wow.
So, you know, Christmas comes rolling around and there's no money in the coffers. However, that year, I had discovered The Joy of Cooking cookbook.
Uh-huh.
And I discovered how to make the world's greatest brownies. Yeah, with walnuts.
Yeah. Thank you.
And so what I did was I whipped out all the pans I could, and I made a mass quantity of brownies.
Uh-huh.
And I gave everybody in the family my master chocolate brownies with walnuts out of The Joy of Cooking book, the world's greatest. And, you know, to this day, they'll still say that was their best gift.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So anyway, like I say, to those that feel that, you know, it's about gifts that cost a lot, and I've certainly spent my money on those, the brownies. Make something yourself, and trust me, it'll be received with open arms and open heart as much or more than anything else you could give. How about you, Mark?
Well, and that gives me a chance to say thank you to all the people who paraded into the Sports Leisure Vacations office over the last few weeks with all kinds of, you can't believe the amount, the countertop in the kitchen is piled like in layers of stuff. Amazing homemade
probably some
things.
Homemade brownies.
Oh, yeah,
there.
lots of wonderful things. You know, at our house, when I was growing up, there were three kids, one parent, mom. We never had a whole lot, but we always seemed to have enough at Christmas time. It was always a struggle to make it from, you know, we would live paycheck to paycheck, and we were always out of money on the 25th of the month, which coincidentally is the day of Christmas. And I don't know how mom pulled it off, but she had to be somewhat of a miracle worker because there were years when that were just really lean. And some years we didn't have as many presents. But I don't ever remember being disappointed at Christmas. We always had a nice meal. It was always a really special day. And in our family, it was like we had made it another year. And
awesome.
Perhaps more than New Year's. And we started this thing in our family where we couldn't wait for Christmas Day. So when we somewhere along the line, we decided it was okay to open one gift on Christmas Eve.
There you go. The one Christmas Eve gift. And then you had to wait for Santa.
Yeah.
Get up the next morning.
And the thing about Santa was, quickly here, is that in our house, even after we got old enough not to necessarily, the whole Santa thing changed. But we always, in our house, we always believed in Santa. And the very special gift on Christmas morning was always from Santa, no matter who would put it there.
There you go. Well, all right, Mark, you have yourself a great rest of your Christmas day. Let's see, we got a big New Year's show coming up a week from today.
A week from today,
and,
yeah.
And if we do it right, we'll be pulling out some of the best, or at least the most interesting.
But not a recorded show. We're going to be here in the studio, and we're going to kind of narrate some of our highlights from the whole year, the Travel Guys Year in Review. Merry Christmas to you, my friend.
And Merry Christmas to you, Mark, and Merry Christmas to our wonderful audience, because without you, you know, we wouldn't need to be here, would we?
No.
All right, stay well. We'll see you next week here on the Travel Guys.